This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for sticking with us here on The Morning Run. I am Tan Chung Han. With me in the studio is Sharad Kutin and Brian Fernandez. Now, before we take a closer look at some local business news or economic-related ones as well, we'll look ahead to what's coming up after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. On the breakfast grill, we have S. Nagunalingam, Project Director of KL Sports City for MRCB. And Brian, you'll be speaking to him.
Yeah, I'm basically going to ask him key things of what the project is all about. Why do we actually have to spend 1.1 billion ringgit on this project when previously Bukit Jalil Sports City, Bukit Jalil Stadium was a white elephant? It's been renamed now to KL Sports City. I'm also, very interestingly, our research found that there were strong political connections in the company that was awarded this contract. So I asked him about that as well and whether that was a big factor in them winning the contract.
Now, apparently this is just the first phase, right? Because beyond the SEA Games, it's expected that the surrounding area around these four major stadiums, that being the Bukit Jalil Stadium, I think there's the Axiata Arena as well, and a couple of others. The idea is to have more social activities, more economic activities taking place at that sports city, right? So will your discussion extend beyond what's going to happen after the SEA Games?
Yes, I think that's what I'm going to ask him. I'm also going to ask him about details of the land swap deal. Our research has shown that it was really a sweetheart deal. So I'm going to ask them some pretty hard questions.
Well, you know, the issue, of course, is that this is not just a local story. We've had with every successive Olympic event, we've had the question of the investments made by national governments in the infrastructure, their aspirations for that infrastructure to then service the population. And then what we've had is typically stories of the deterioration of those venues, a lack of use, and then these things become white elephants and a real burden to those national governments. So that question is asked over and over again. Every time you have these big, prestigious sporting events, do the numbers make sense at the end of the day?
Yes, I'm going to ask him really clearly, because of the Brazilian experience, really about the sustainability and access to the general population in Malaysia.
Okay, so that's coming up again after the 8 a.m. news bulletin on the breakfast grill. Now, looking further ahead into the day, at 12 p.m. today, we've got Malaysia's second quarter GDP that's set to be announced. According to the Bloomberg Surveys median estimate, 5.4% growth. Again, that's the median estimate. But now ahead of that announcement, you've got Fitch Ratings, who has kept Malaysia's rating stable at A-. Isn't that right, Brian?
Yeah, that's right. So basically, we've got Fitch argues that or states that we have sustained current account surpluses of almost 2% of GDP, as our export performance has been very, very good to counter strong import growth as well. We are still in a net creditor position. However, we are constrained. Our A-minus rating is constrained by a couple of different matrices compared to our peer median. Our GDP at the end of 2017 is projected to be just under $10,000 against 19,955 for our peer median. So we're quite far away from that perspective.
And that's for per capita, right?
Yes, that's right.
All right. And also looking at other economic indicators, be it our export numbers, we have seen double-digit growth on year for pretty much every single month in the first half of this year. We have seen how our foreign reserves have steadily made their way back closer towards that $100 billion US dollar mark, although it's still a ways away from the all-time high of about $141 billion as of May 2013.
This comes on the heels, of course, of Moody's, which also released its latest assessment of Malaysia, which I think all in all looked like a very positive one. It says that it would take significant deterioration in Malaysia's external metrics from current levels for the country's credit profile to weaken. So there's some domestic issues, I think, that Moody points to. But even in that, a domestic scenario would be quite had to be quite dramatic for Malaysia's ratings to change, right?
Yeah, also because Moody's actually in their report gave a comparison between Malaysia and our ASEAN peers. Now, while on one hand you've got Malaysia that is on that fiscal consolidation path, in other words, the government can just spend willy-nilly on and take on debt, you know, just simply, as opposed to, say, the Philippines. They have now recorded, I think, 8 straight quarters of GDP growth above 6%. But how did they get there? They moved from a budget surplus towards a fiscal deficit. In other words, they're incurring debt to really fund that kind of GDP growth.
And also, is there a problem with the Philippines in terms of the peso? There's the weakening of the peso is something of concern for them. So despite that really positive picture on the GDP front, there's also the question of a weakening peso.
I think the Filipino issue is, and we've talked about it in some of our market watches, it's really a perception issue in terms of Duterte and the direction that the Philippines is going. The economic numbers are actually very, very good, but the currency numbers don't support that economic
numbers. There we go. You know, so once again, it's the currency perhaps not reflecting the country's fundamentals. You know, here we have 5.6% GDP growth for the first quarter of this year. This for the second quarter, perhaps 5.4%. What do those numbers mean? It is way better than the 4.2% that we saw for all of last year. In other words, the Malaysian economy is expected to grow faster than expected. Also yesterday, we got some commentary from Jamil Ahmad, who is the Vice President of Corporate Development and Market Research at Forex Time. And here's what he has to say about his expectations for the print, again due at 12 p.m. today.
As we head into the end of this current week, major focus will be on Malaysia with its scheduled GDP data. Now, the expectations for Malaysia have increased in recent months, and the reasons for this is because there's been better data from the Malaysian economy across the board. So really, I think there's an outside chance that GDP reading will follow the same pattern as what we saw in the previous quarter, where there was a very impressive GDP number, and the actual figures beat expectations. Generally speaking, the Malaysian economy has performed better as a whole than anybody expected it would do in 2017. I think this provides food for thought when it comes to the previous arguments that the ringgit was oversold completely when it comes to economic sentiment and fundamentals. But let's see how this data goes and whether it will provide some fluctuations in the local market. Maybe it will encourage investors to continue investing in Malaysia, or maybe it will just show that the economy is performing consistently above expectations.
Again, that was Jamil Ahmad, Vice President of Corporate Development and Market Research at Forex Time, outlining his expectations for second quarter GDP data for Malaysia due out at 12 p.m. today. Again, go through some numbers here. Bloomberg Surveys median estimate 5.4%, about 20 basis points slower than the first quarter on your growth, 5.6%, but certainly way better than the 4.2% that we saw for all of last year. Make sure you stay tuned to BFM. I'm sure our news team will keep you up to date on that. Now, moving on to our e-commerce industry. Now, speaking about, you know, drivers of growth for the Malaysian economy, perhaps the e-commerce space might be another, you know, leg that we can stand on, because we've got some numbers here from iPrice Group, which is an online shopping aggregator, and they estimate Malaysia's e-commerce industry to be now a 24.6 billion ringgit industry.
So basically, to give you a context of how large 24.6 billion ringgit is, it is slightly above Malawi's GDP. So I think some of the things is we realize that it's far bigger than many of us have thought of. The top e-commerce companies in Malaysia, unsurprisingly, are actually foreign companies. It's Lazada at number one, headquarters in Singapore, Zalora number two, and 11th Street, which it's a joint venture between Celcom and a Korean company.
Yeah, some of the top e-commerce companies that have been mentioned, you just mentioned one, Lazada, Zalora, 11th Street. And I think that's what's really interesting is from this report, you also get a sense of some of the lessons that have been learned, including the question of scalability, which is proving to be the most effective tool for businesses.
All right. And also, when you consider the growth that we have seen here in the Malaysian e-commerce space, I wonder if this is just part of that global trend, because obviously what is happening in China with Alibaba, with Tencent, Tencent, and they're just obviously putting us to shame here.
No, but also there is a local story with that as well. So it's interesting that the number one local company that is in this space is actually a company called Lelong.com. And Lelong.com it was founded by a guy called Richard Tan. In .com part one, so I think it was something in the 98 or 99, and they are basically five times the traffic of Hermo, which is a beauty site, which is in second place. And interesting, a name like Hermo was not a name that came to mind for me. So I asked our interns, and they all have used it. So it's incredible. Three balding men here have no idea of Hermo, but we're not the target audience. It's the young females target audience.
What I love is that, you know, Han, the younger Han is now being outed as well.
Yeah, no, well,
having a follicular
are
problem.
Are there any sites for hair transplants? I don't know.
I'm sure there are many. Well, it's a billion-dollar industry.
But also one of the key things that we look at e-commerce is the O2O strategy. So the online to offline. So these traditional e-commerce sites are actually opening offline stores, while at the same time, brick-and-mortar stores are opening online sites.
And we have gotten some numbers out of Alibaba recently, right? Very quickly.
Yeah, so Alibaba's numbers are fantastic. They beat market estimates with a 56% rise in first quarter revenue, driven by very strong online sales. Its platforms made up 86% of revenue, up from 73% earlier.
All right, so that was some updates on the Malaysian e-commerce industry. Coming up after the 8 a.m. news, we've got the Breakfast Grill with S. Nagunalingam, Project Director of KL Sports City MRCB, right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.